I have this philosophy of mirror and container, and this is kind of macro, but some people need for you to be a container so that it's a safe space for them to hear the feedback. Some people need for you to be a mirror.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of How to Product, a podcast series on product management, brought to you by PM School and your host, Archiv Jain. This podcast series is focused on bringing in product leaders from across the globe and creating valuable content on product management for our listeners with a key focus on early in career product professionals. Today's episode is unique. It's not specific to product management, and we haven't really done episodes on soft skills, but we believe these skills are just as essential to become a successful professional. Today, we'll talk about feedback and how to give and receive feedback and how that plays a role in your career growth. Let's dive right into the episode. I have with me Meenal Mehta, co-founder and CEO of Altix, the most connected way to gather online. She started this company with the belief that everyone could benefit from a safe space online to connect with others and find professional, intellectual, emotional, and creative fulfillment. Meenal is particularly motivated to work on things that help people be better to themselves and each other. She's a big believer in the power of storytelling and enjoys speaking about the power of connection, the next billion users, women in tech, careers in tech, and product management best practices. Previously, Meenal was the head of product management for next billion users at YouTube, leading a suite of products that delivered growth while serving the distinct needs of users in high-growth global markets. Meenal has previously led PM and design teams at LinkedIn and Amazon as well as in early-stage companies. She has a Bachelor's of Science in Computer Science from Stanford University and an MBA from the Harvard Business School. Meenal, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
There's so much I can talk to you about, but before we get into that, I want to sort of understand the human behind the product leader that Meenal is, right? And we have a few rapid-fire questions for you. So quickly, what book are you currently reading?
Such a great question, and I feel like I'm often reading multiple books at the same time. Apt to the conversation we're about to have, the book I am in the process of reading is this book called The Four Agreements. I don't know if you've heard of it. Okay. By Don Miguel Ruiz, and like literally talks about the four agreements you have with yourself, which I'll read out for all your readers. One is be impeccable with your word. The second is don't take anything personally. The third is don't make assumptions. And the fourth is always do your best. And I feel like it's a short read. It could be useful for any of your readers. I'd also say I recently reread The Alchemist. It's one of my favorites. I feel like it just comes into my life every so often. And it's like, I was at an Airbnb recently and it was just there and I picked it up and I finished it over breakfast one morning. And it's just such a great book to remind you of the power of following your dreams and staying strong when things don't go your way. So, yeah.
I haven't read that one, The Alchemist. So I'm going to pick it up sometime for sure. Thank you. Thank you for that recommendation. Quickly moving on, what's the best advice someone has given you?
Oh my gosh, there's so many pieces of advice, but like, again, just the one we just read, don't take yourself too seriously, I think is a really important one. I think going deeper than that, this isn't one person who said it, but I feel like over time, more and more my peer group, my friends, like everybody is reaching this conclusion of really listening to your own intuition. We are born with our own intuition. I don't know if you have kids, but like I have two kids, and like when you watch them grow up, they know who they are and they know what they want, and it is so clear to them. And then somewhere along the way, we get conditioned by society and what other people want, or by the next promotion or whatever it is that you're chasing, and you forget to listen to that quiet voice inside you that really is your North Star. And so more and more, as I talk to people, and this is a journey I've been on as well, but more and more I've heard folks coming back to like, okay, like let me make the time to listen to my own intuition. It is my life and I need to do what's right for me.
Love it. Like, I can already get a glimpse of how amazing this episode's going to be in this, because we're going to get into so many things. But love that one. And quickly, what hobbies do you have outside of work?
Oh, I rotate my hobbies a lot. I know some people have the same hobby for like years and years, and reading is one of those that obviously has stuck with me. But I always have some sort of workout and some sort of creative outlet. So for right now, my workout is kickboxing. It's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Just it's like my skill is improving. I get to punch a bag. Like there's, it's really, really fun. And then my flow state creative activity is painting. I have these little 5x7 canvases that I've bought, and I just bought a bunch of paint, and like I just paint whatever I feel like. So it's like I don't have any skill, but it's just like, again, whatever that intuition with inside me needs to come out on a canvas, like just comes out, and it's really fun.
That does sound a lot of fun. Do you involve your children in it as well?
Yeah. We all do our little canvases and paint. Or, you know, when we're working out, my son does Taekwondo, so we talk about the kicks that I'm learning. It's, when you have kids, it's actually kind of fun. It keeps you young, and they ask all of these questions, and it brings you back to the present moment.
That's something for me to explore in the future.
Yes.
So I'll definitely do that. But this, like, that it was so clear from your introduction. There's so much I can talk to you about, and I wanna definitely dive deep into coaching and feedback.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, there's a very interesting topic about the next billion users, mm-hmm. right? And I wanna dive a little bit deeper into that. How are these markets sort of different from already mature markets? And these are the emerging markets that we're talking about, right? And what nuances should PMs keep in mind while building for this audience? And since you were at Google and YouTube, if you have any anecdotes from your time there, it would be of great benefit to our listeners, because these are apps that we use day in, day out.
Yeah. So what is interesting is like we at Google stopped calling it the emerging markets because these markets had already emerged. They just emerged differently from, you know, the Western markets that we were used to building for, which is why the word next billion users or the term next billion users was coined, because it's not about emerging or different. It's about the next billion users and how they are. I would say when I was working on it, and this is so familiar to you, but like many users in these markets are mobile only, right? This is completely different from the markets that we're used to. And so we had to rethink how we built for these markets from the ground up. And what I often say is when you're building for the next billion users, the trends that you see there often are trends that come back to you know, the more Western markets. Like mobile is an interesting one. When we built downloading videos or downloading of maps, they were built for places where people didn't have great connectivity, but we all use it now all the time for all various use cases, right? So sometimes when you build for a specific need, like actually it becomes really useful to everybody. But when we were building for these next billion users, things that were different were, of course, that mobile only, not mobile first, but mobile only, you know, not mobile as a second screen, mobile only. Like this is just your entire workflow is on mobile. The users that we were focused on. So again, taking a country like India, the users that we were focused on specifically at YouTube was trying to target the users that were less literate, the users that were multilingual. You know, of course, India as a market, again, has like the top 15 million users that are different, right? That behave very similarly to Western markets. But when you think about that next tier of users, like you have less literate users, multilingual users, they used to share devices. And so those are some constraints that you take into account. And it's super interesting when we went and did user research, and I did user research in like villages in India, like I've gone to like villages in Indonesia, like just gone and understood the markets at a completely different level. Just the way the users think is so different. It's like, oh yeah, I paid for my data and it ran out and then I'm just done using it, right? Like there's no like I have a task to complete or I have something to figure out. Or like when you watch them use the YouTube app, obviously there's voice search in YouTube, which they use, but then when they land on a search results page that's all text. Right? So watching how they navigate that, and is there a way that we can make that better for them? Just things that we don't notice, but when you watch the users, you see like how they use the internet. It's really, really fascinating. The thing that I learned in working in the next billion users is how rapidly these markets are changing. And I think it's just similar to how rapidly our world is changing right now. But in these markets, when Reliance Jio came out and made data free in, I think it was like 2015, 2016, I think 2016-ish. Like all of our assumptions about the market changed, right? Like all of a sudden, people had free data. So people watched a ton of YouTube. And so we weren't focused on making the app smaller or making downloads smaller. We were just more focused on getting the right content out, right? So the strategy needed to shift as the market shifted. And because we saw that in Indonesia, our biggest focus was how do we get data to be cheaper? Because we saw that as soon as the data is cheaper, people will use YouTube. There's no, like that's such an obvious product market fit product that instead of focusing on a lot of things, let's first focus on getting the data cheaper. People use YouTube and then let's make sure that is localized for the markets that we're in. So just the thing I learned and I took away, especially at a larger company working on markets like the ones we've talked about, is just you have to be in touch with the market and how quickly the markets can change, because if you're not, then you're building a product that's obsolete or not going to work. So, which is, I guess, great when you come into startup land, because it's the same thing that happens here as well.
Yeah, very interesting. And I do you see these countries sort of be similar? Like, do you think India and Indonesia were similar in the sense that how, like data, for example, right? Like data wasn't cheap. So do you see these countries to be similar and then sort of build, or do you go very deep into, okay, we're building just for India or just for Indonesia and then go deeper into that?
I think there's some characteristics that are similar and some that aren't, right? But like at a high level, just like the data problem was important. The, you know, the types of phones users used are obviously very different.
Yeah.
You know, you're using cheaper phones or, but some things are different. Like in India, the Reliance Jio feature phone became a really big surface for us, right? Because like it was cheap and people used it. Of course, then it stopped working and there was a lot of issues with it down the road. But that feature phone phenomenon didn't really take off anywhere else in the world. Like Indonesia didn't have it. Sub-Saharan Africa didn't have it. People tried to copy it in those markets, but it never became a thing. So that was when we built for that phone or that form factor and built on KaiOS, which was the operating system that that phone used. That was very much just an India phenomenon. So kind of like, there's a little bit of a, like, what's similar, what's different, and then still, like, doing the prioritization exercises and all of that and, like, choosing what result based on that.
Okay, interesting. And was one more question on this, right, because this is such an interesting topic, is was the insight that you spoke about in Indonesia, which is you had to just get data to be cheaper for people to use YouTube, did that insight come from learnings from India where, hey, free data, so everyone's just using YouTube now? So was that sort of one of those?
I think, yes, it all happened around the same time. It was a thesis that we had, and then to just like actually have this massive experiment be aware for us without us having to do anything, just showcase that. What made it really easy is using that data when we went to speak to telco providers in these other markets, there was like data to point to, right? Like that this happened. And actually the biggest thing that was super interesting is when Jio started charging for the data. I remember like when it was free and then like, I remember 6 months later or something, right? Like they're like, we're going to charge. Of course, very, very cheap compared to where it used to be, but like we're going to start charging. And everyone predicted that like people wouldn't pay for that data and everyone were dead wrong. Like people, like once they have access to this, they're not willing to give up access, right? So that giant experiment actually helped telco providers in other countries just feel a lot more confident about making these types of bets.
Lovely. Awesome. We can go on about next billion users, but I want to talk to you about something that we've never talked about on this podcast. And it's not just specific to product managers. I think it's very generic and applicable to professionals or even just, you know, people in their everyday lives. So it's about coaching and feedback, right? And so sticking to the professional world in a fast-paced dynamic work environment, how can employees create opportunities to seek feedback and engage in meaningful discussions with their peers and managers?
So I want to talk about what feedback means, maybe before we even go into that, because I think your question is about like, how do I improve as a worker of some sort, right? Like that's one of the tenets of feedback. But feedback is like all around us all the time. As a product manager specifically, you put your product out there and you're curious about the feedback that you're getting. you talk to your users and you do market research and you're getting feedback from them. You are putting out presentations at work and you're getting feedback there. You're, you know, improving your skills and you're getting feedback from there. And of course, like, you're improving your own inner landscape and you're getting feedback from there as well, right? So feedback is multidimensional. And I'd say my answer is somewhat simplistic in this, which is like the only way to get feedback is to put yourself out there as often as you can. So don't go and ask for permission and say, hey, can I do this deck or can I take this project? Like, do a first draft, share it around, get feedback. People are much more prone to responding to something that is put in front of them versus a blank sheet of paper. So going and asking people, can you give me feedback, is like a recipe for disaster. But you put a piece of work out there and get feedback on it, you're sure to grow, right? Like, even if it's like, I'm going to write a blog post and get feedback on it. That's much better than sitting someone down and saying, give me feedback. Because everybody is looking to learn new things and respond to things. We're used to doing that today. So just keep creating things. That's the way you get feedback, is you keep creating things, you keep sharing things. That's the surest way to make sure that people are telling you what they think.
Love it. And I think there's an element of just being proactive and being open to feedback as well. Like, if you want to create that presentation and the example that you took, right, just you do it with an intention of wanting to grow and improve, and then going, putting yourself out there and asking for feedback.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, like, I just want to, like, highlight this point about being proactive. You are responsible for your own growth. Like, nobody else really cares. You know, we used to maybe live in organizations where you used to have a career for 30 years. Like, my parents' generation, that was true. That is no longer true. Yeah. Like, you are your own biggest advocate. You are your own brand. You are the only one that really cares. I often say this to people. You are the protagonist in your own life. Everybody else is just a supporting actor in your own life, right? Like, so to think somebody cares that much about you is a little bit of a fallacy. And so, like, being proactive, being responsible for your own growth, but also not taking it too seriously. Put it out there. If it's not great, it's not great. Like, that's fine. Because you'll learn something from there versus trying to make it perfect before you put it out there.
Love it. So quickly moving on to the next question, right? And this is, so we spoke about being proactive and sort of putting yourself out there. Okay, it doesn't come naturally to everyone, right? It is, some people struggle with that first initiative of actually putting themselves out there. So for individuals who struggle with receiving feedback, what actionable steps can they take to overcome defensiveness and turn, like, feedback into valuable learning opportunities for themselves?
So first of all, I think you have to remember that when someone provides feedback, it is just their individual opinion. It is not the gospel truth. It is not, you know, like, somehow better than your own truth. It is just their opinion. And so I think even just reframing that and saying, okay, like, I'm going and I'm putting myself out there and people are giving me feedback, and just being like, whatever they say, it is their opinion. It is then up to me to decide what to do with that opinion. That definitely takes away a lot of the edge, because I think a lot of us are very conditioned to believe that, like, other people's opinions of us matter a lot.
Yeah.
Right? I often say, like, for many people, and I think many people I know that I've seen in my work, and it was my own growth, like, we're all people pleasers. And why we're people pleasers is because, like, we say, oh, if I do something and that person thinks highly of me, then I think highly of me. But if you just take away that whole, like, external cycle and say, I believe in me regardless, and then going out to get information is just that, going out and getting information to get other people's opinion. So reminding yourself, number one, that any information you get is someone else's opinion, then it is up to you to decide what you want to do with it. The second thing I will say, and this is when people actually get defensive, is when something hits home, it's because of two factors. One is, it is triggering of something else that has happened in your previous life, right? Like, a manager talks to you in a particular way, it's because maybe a parent had spoken to you that way, and it triggers all sorts of things that a six-year-old version of you, like, doesn't even know how to control, right? Because it's happened when you were so young, and we don't have the skills to deal with that when you're so young. So either it's triggering for that reason, or it is triggering because it is something you believe is true about you. So when you feel your body getting defensive, when, and there's so many signs, everybody has a sign, so learn what your signs are. You're out of breath, you stop breathing, your breath gets faster, you feel a knot in your stomach, your chest gets tighter, a shoulder feels weird, you want to run away. Like, our body gives us clues. So defensiveness is not a state of mind, right? Like, you're actually getting the clues. So learning to listen to the clues that your body is giving you on something is off here. And when those clues come, thanking the universe, or thinking, like, internally, right, inside your head, like, thinking whatever you believe in, that their life has presented you with an opportunity to go dig deeper into why this thing's happening. And usually it's one of two things: prior trauma or prior, like, conditioning, or because this is something you believe is true about yourself. So, like, remind yourself, this is actually the moment to get curious. This isn't the moment to run away, right? And if it is overwhelming, which it is, like, I mean, we all are learning constantly how to handle these deep and big emotions that have come our way. You know, when I went to school, these weren't things that were taught. I think schools these days are working a little bit more on that. But, like, these are things that we are all learning in many ways as adults. But if it is too much, then just say something to the other person to say, hey, this is really helpful. You know, I might have follow-up questions for you, but thank you for giving me this much. So if you don't have it in you to get curious and go deeper at that point, right? Path one is, okay, I notice I'm getting defensive about this because body is giving clues. And when that happens, like, kind of take a second to ground yourself, deep breath, feel the ground underneath your body, and then just say, I'm going to get curious, and ask the follow-up questions, because you're going to learn the most when you ask those follow-up questions, right? Doesn't mean you believe it's the gospel truth, but you ask those follow-up questions. If you cannot in that moment hear the things that you need to hear because your body is so overwhelmed and you're feeling so defensive, then path two is saying, thank you. I'm going to process what you've just said, and I might come back to you with follow-up questions. So keep that dialogue open so that gift can come to you later, but also honor what is going on within you and not do anything. So that's what I would say is, like, it's not a, oh, like, here's a magic pill and you'll stop being defensive. But it is a, what we talked about, listening to your own intuition. The biggest source of your own intuition is your own body. Like, our body gives us clues all the time. And so learning to listen to our intuition is an exercise in learning to decode the messages that we're getting constantly from what our body is giving us, and learning how to respond to those clues that we're getting. And then the last thing I'll say there, and then, like, maybe we can dive deeper, is that sometimes you will get feedback where someone tells you something about you that you actually really like about yourself. Like, I often used to get the feedback earlier on in my career that my standards are too high. You know, you hold people to a really high standard. And it was meant, I think, as a criticism, because, like, they're saying that nobody can meet these standards that you're setting. And I remember thinking, when I was like 25, 26, I actually kind of like that about myself. Because, like, I help people grow, and also I'm surrounded by people who are really, really good at what they do. And for a long time, I took it as a criticism. But then now it's like, you listen to, no, this is something I like about myself. So if someone else's opinion is that your standards are too high, it's actually their opinion. My standards are just the right amount of high for myself. And there are people in the world who meet those standards and exceed those standards and wow me every single day. And as I've started my company, I'm just surrounded by people who fit that mold, right? So also knowing, going back to that, it's just someone else's opinion. If you find yourself thinking, well, like, I like that about myself, then great, listen to your intuition on that. You don't have to change something that you like about yourself.
Right. I love that attitude and that last point you made. Wanted to talk a little bit more about the whole, it's someone else's opinion and it's not the gospel truth. But if you start identifying themes and patterns once you start taking feedback from peers around you and managers, right? How does one then sort of go on from there to not just say, you know what, okay, maybe this is something I need to work on, and sort of telling themselves that, okay, probably identifying that, so I want to dive a little bit deeper into that.
So I'm firmly of the belief that 50% of the work that we do in this life is inside and 50% is outside. And in fact, they work in tandem, because whatever is happening on the outside is helping us grow and change on the inside. So, you know, like, I am a firm believer, like, I've meditated, I don't know, for the last 8 years, almost every single day. I'm a firm believer in going deep inside and doing the inner work. And there is no substitute for that. But I'm also a firm believer in not going in, like, living on a mountaintop and doing the inner work, because right, the outer world provides us with the opportunities and the data that help us grow on the inside as well. Right. So it's like this 50-50 balance, right? So what you said is, like, you're curious, you're open, you're identifying patterns, people are saying something about you, you're ready to get curious to do the work, then go do the work. There's some people then try to pretend to do the work. I'm going to do this so that they see blah, 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 right? Mm. That's not enough. You actually have to change inside out for that shift to make sense. And some things are deeper and some things are less deep. So I'll give you an example of something that is maybe not so deep. So for myself, again, just using me as an example, when I was earlier in my career, I was at Amazon and I was amazing at execution. Any project that needed to get done, they would find me and I would make that happen. In fact, there was a project that I shipped that people came and said to me, they're like, oh, three people who are much more senior than you couldn't ship that. And I guess I was just like, I was too young to know it couldn't be done. So I just did it anyway, right? Sometimes youth is amazing. But then I found myself watching other people and saying, oh, the people that I respect the most can switch from strategy to tactics like in a microsecond. They are not just at the tactical level. They're not just living at the strategic level. They can ping pong back and forth. At 1 second, they're at the 30,000 foot view. And the next second, they are like at the 1 millimeter view so that they can actually execute, right? So that combination is really powerful. And that's why I decided to go to business school. I said, if I go for 2 years to a place where they're doing case studies all the time, and that's why I chose Harvard Business School, they're doing case studies all the time, 500 cases, I'm pretending to be the CEO and building that muscle of being strategic all the time. I'm not ready to let go of my tactics, so I'm not going to go become a management consultant after this and give people advice all day long. But I'm going to develop this muscle that is weak, and then I'm going to figure out how to marry these two muscles together afterwards, right? So it wasn't like, let me pretend to be a strategic person. It was a depth of like, let me go change from the inside out my skill, because then I believe I will be a much more valuable and productive member of society. And so I went and I did the work and I made that happen. So that's one example. The other example is the inner work. If something is triggering for you, for all the reasons that we spoke about, then actually making the time to change it and not thinking about it as, I'm going to change it so I get that next promotion, and or I'm going to change it so that this person has a better opinion of me, but to change it because you truly believe that this is a shift that you want to make. And this is a really important point. Intention really matters, because when anytime you're just trying to put on a Band-Aid, it's going to backfire. Like, maybe it'll work for like 5 minutes, an hour, a year, but it is going to backfire in the long term, because all you're doing is developing a mask on top of a mask on top of a mask on top of a mask. And at some point, those masks like collapse and then you're back to where you were. So if there is something that is triggering for you or something that is hitting home for you in a particular way, then figuring out how to do the inner work to do that. You can do it on your own. I personally find meditation and journaling to be a very powerful exercise. I recommend that to everybody that I meet in my coaching world, in the company that I lead. Just 10 minutes of meditation, 20 minutes of journaling every day can go a really long way to listen to what is happening within you and like write it down, so that you can start working with yourself. You don't need a third party to work with sometimes. All you need to do is work with yourself. Or even when you're ready to work with a third party, having done that inner work, actually will take the third party relationship to the next level. So working with a coach or working with a therapist or working with a manager or a mentor. But usually, like if you're doing this kind of inner work, working with a coach or a therapist or a peer group can be really powerful. But even just starting with the meditation and the journaling can take you a really long way. And then doing the work. It's not paying lip service to the work. And the work is really hard because you take two steps forward, you take one step back. Years of conditioning aren't going to go away in an instant, right? But being clear and doing the work and making those shifts, and you'll start noticing that in the outside world, even pretty quickly, people will say, oh, that's really cool. Like you seem to have an abundance mindset, or anytime I'm with you, I feel a lot more abundant. As an example, whatever it is, people will start reflecting that back on you, which is great motivation to keep doing the work. But really, you're doing the work because it's a shift that you are choosing to make. And so again, I don't have a silver bullet answer, but doing the work, there's no substitute for doing the work. And we can't do the work on 50,000 different things. So being very mindful of what you're choosing to work on, whether it is skill-based or internally based, is really important, because then you put in the depth and make things happen.
Awesome. I was honestly just listening to you and I was internalizing a lot of things that you were saying, and I have so many follow-up questions, but I'm going to, in interest of time, I'm going to we spoke about sort of taking feedback and accepting feedback. Now there's the other side of it is giving feedback.
Of course.
Right. And I want to talk a little bit about that, which is I think this is out there, giving feedback is an art. So how does a coach figure out the right approach to help their mentees? And can you share some difficulties you've had? Like you mentioned about the coaching that you do. So some difficulties that you've had while coaching.
Yeah. And I think it's different. Okay. So I have to say it's very different when you're a coach, a mentor, and when you are a manager, because when you're a manager, this person reports to you, their success is your success. There's somebody you've hired onto the team. And so I have this philosophy of mirror and container. And this is kind of macro. But some people need for you to be a container so that it's a safe space for them to hear the feedback. Mm. Some people need for you to be a mirror and say, I just heard you say this. You're telling me you're trying to work on this, but clearly there's no progress. So I'm just going to be a mirror to what is happening to you. And different people thrive with either containers or mirrors, but also you as a manager, a mentor, or coach could be a container or mirror depending on who you are, right? So just kind of learning that little bit of a landscape on, like, if I'm being a mirror to somebody, but it's not working, maybe I need to be a container and be a little bit more Socratic with them and ask a lot of follow-up questions. If being a container to somebody is not moving them forward, then maybe you just need to be a lot more direct and be a mirror and say, this is what I'm seeing. What about you, right? So that's a little bit macro, but I think that is a good framework that works. I think personally, I'm a lot more of a mirror as a coach, a mentor, a manager. And so people who thrive in my world are people who can actually accept that feedback and move forward pretty rapidly. The second thing I will say, and this is also macro, is that not everybody should be helped. And this might be somewhat controversial, but I firstly realized if somebody on the receiving end is constantly getting defensive, constantly attacking, constantly gaslighting back, I've given feedback to so many people, I've had to lay people off, I've had to fire people. How people respond to these things is very telling about where they are on the journey. And I used to, as a younger manager, feel like, oh my gosh, like I know exactly how to help this person when they get into these modes. And I think as we grow older, you realize, well, if they're not ready to be helped, then there's nothing you can do to change that person at this moment. Again, people are not static. 6 months from now, a year from now, that could be different. But nowadays, when people get really defensive multiple times, when you're giving them feedback, I'm just like, you're not ready to hear this. So I'm not sure we should be having this conversation right now. And sometimes I'll actually say that. And that like is like a trigger. Either people are like, oh, actually, she's right. I'm not ready to hear this. And I want to change. or she's not ready to hear this and I don't want to change, or what the hell does she know, and get even more defensive.
Right.
Right. And in bucket three is exactly where you're just, you don't want to waste your time. So that's another macro, like not everybody needs to be helped. Going back to your growth is your problem. If people aren't taking their own growth seriously, like why should you as a coach or manager or mentor push them to be more? So this notion of feedback should be, there should be an ease to this process is really important. And if you find yourself finding this process not easy, there's two reasons. One is because you haven't developed the skill of giving feedback, and we'll talk about that in a second, or because this person is not ready to hear your feedback. And again, just diagnosing which one it is so that you can work, either choose to not work with this person or actually improve how you're giving feedback is really important. Now, if you feel like, okay, I'm the one that didn't do a good job, right? I would say the first step is always ask for permission. I have something to share with you. Are you open to hearing it? That sets somebody up in a different frame of mind, right? Secondly, go step by step and check in. In that last meeting, I saw that you were getting more and more defensive, trying to make your point versus listening to somebody else. Is this what you felt? Do you agree? So kind of making that time to go step by step through any feedback that you're giving is actually really powerful. Usually I found that the people that are open feel a great deal of relief when you go through it step by step with them in that way, because they're feeling it on the inside already. They don't know how to put words to it. And so that somebody is willing to put words to it, there's just like a great deal of relief, because now the problem is out in the open and it can be solved, versus the problem is I have so much shame because I behave that way, or I'm not that great, right? So someone once said to me, and I've done a lot of like, you know, deep work and learning about therapy, but actually someone said to me that they watched a TikTok video that said, when you share your trauma, the trauma has no hold over you. And I think that is true of your shame or of how you've behaved, or when you have this like negative self-talk about yourself. If someone's just like, hey, I saw this happened, and not personalize it, but make it about, I saw this happened, right? That there is like actually like this huge relief, because then you're saying, what you're saying as a manager or as a mentor is now we can take the steps to move forward from here. Because this elephant that we were trying to hide, that wasn't staying hidden, because like an elephant doesn't fit into a fridge no matter what you do, is just out in the open. Now we can work on it together. So usually people feel great relief. The people that don't and push back and try to say it's your fault, I wasn't prepared in that meeting because you told me, blah, blah, blah. That goes back to my earlier point. If they're not willing to do the work and they're not ready to hear the feedback, then you can't push people to do that. And then as a manager, especially, you have a choice down the road whether you want to keep this person or let this person go. Especially in this environment, keeping people who are not willing to do the work is not such a great idea, because you can find amazing people in this market that we're in. So hopefully that provides a framework to help somebody who's a manager, a coach, or a mentor. The other last thing I will add is it is hard to give people feedback. I know I prepare for these conversations all the time. I have my flow chart. I know what's coming because I've done these so many times before. And yet something someone will say will like trigger you, because you're a human and you have a mental story about yourself. And so doing the practices, like doing a 5-minute meditation before a really hard conversation, learning how to stay present through that conversation, having your points of view written down so that anything someone says doesn't shake you and you're not trying to please them in that particular moment. And also, if it's too much for you and someone's attacking you, just say, okay, thank you for your time, and we'll revisit this in 3 days. Same tips that I gave earlier.
Yes.
So it goes at the other end, because it's hard to go in and give people feedback, because it is, you know, you have to be heartless to do it, especially if it's like really, really, really hard feedback. I feel like there's times where I've given feedback over and over and over again, and like that has gone on deaf ears. And then finally you're just like, now I'm going to give you the mother load of feedback. Like that, those conversations are like really incredibly hard. The very, very tactical tip for that I will share is, when you need to do things like that, write up the follow-up email before you give the feedback. because at least at companies, the way this works is you give the feedback. You have no idea what the other person's frame of mind is in listening to the feedback. So you have no idea if they've actually heard everything that you've said and the action items that you've said. And so you usually will send a follow-up email to make sure that you and this other person are on the same page as to what is happening. So if you write the follow-up email ahead of time, it also helps you stay on point and stay on track to give that particular feedback. Also, when you write the email, you have to be very, very specific and just be like super clear about what you're doing so that, you know, you're not meandering when you were given that feedback.
Love it. I love the framework and I love the last point which you mentioned, right, which is that just make sure that you are clear about what feedback you want to give. So have that follow-up email sort of written down. I want to get a little bit more tactical here, which is talk about how do you give specific actionable feedback that somebody can actually act upon? And because that's important, like, again, you said giving feedback is hard, but it's something that we have to keep ourselves open to, and because you own your own growth, right? So how do you, like, tactically, do you have any tips for folks who want to give actionable and specific feedback?
I think you have to meet people at the level that they're at. So the type of feedback I'd give somebody more senior is very different from the type of person I'd give somebody more junior. Mm. So if you're a brand new product manager, typically it's something like, okay, your PRDs need A, B, or C. You're not thinking about metrics. Your next PRDs need to include metrics in there. You haven't spoken to enough users. You're not putting yourself out there. You need to build more relationships. Here are five relationships that I believe that can be beneficial to you. Go do that. Super specific feedback like that at the very junior level is really important. When you're more senior, actually part of what you're trying to understand as a manager is, can this person create structure out of ambiguity? So the feedback is like, you haven't hit your numbers. What's your plan for making it happen? What I need to see from you is a plan. And if that plan cannot be sorted out, then you have a problem. It's not up to you to say, here's how you create a plan. Because you're also trying to see if this person can create a plan. You're not just interested in the output, you're interested in their ability to create a plan. So this is why the specificity and the clarity before you give the feedback is really important, because the types of quote unquote specific feedback you'd give different people is very different. The type of specific feedback I'd give in a coaching environment is also very different from what I'd give in a managing environment. Because as a coach, sometimes I'll be very like specific and like, you're not going to say this in your next meeting, even if somebody is very senior, right? Like, it's fine. Like, you're a senior person in an organization and you need somebody to tell you that. Your management chain is not going to tell you that because you're very senior. But I am going to tell you as your coach, like, if you say this, this will not be good. So do not say this in the next meeting, right? So this is why even as you grow in your career, having people who can give you that very like tactical feedback is super important. So surrounding yourself with people where you have trusted relationships to do that is kind of critical. For me, like, again, I have a great co-founder. We are very blunt with each other. And she's obviously incredibly senior. She was a director of engineering at Google before this. But sometimes the types of feedback we give each other are super tactical. Did you write that email? Did you, like, you know, make that happen? Have you had that particular conversation? Is this the next step that you're taking, right? So having somebody with whom you can do that is really powerful. But when you're giving feedback, knowing your reason for giving feedback, what is the level of the person? How is it specific? But you also, especially as a manager, and I know we didn't talk about this, but your role as a coach, a mentor, a manager are very different. But especially as a manager in an organization, you're not trying to scaffold the person so that like they are just forever reliant on you. So you have to also pay attention to that.
Right. Love it. This can be a 1.5 hour long conversation, but before I let you go, I definitely want to talk about for early in career professionals. I know you touched upon it, but how can they leverage the executives that exist, or just finding a mentor that can help them grow in the organization? Do you have any tips for them on how they can find a mentor for themselves?
Yeah, I think the premise of the question isn't exactly right, right? And Sheryl Sandberg said that in one of her books. I don't remember which one. Like, people who go around and, you know, find someone like her in an organization and say, will you be my mentor? Nobody's going to be anyone's mentor. Like, it just doesn't work that way, right? It's like there's a children's book where like a duck goes around and says, will you be my mother? Like, that's, it just doesn't work that way. you fall into these relationships, and the only way you fall into these relationships is by doing more. The more you put yourself out there, the more someone is going to notice you, the more someone's going to help you, the more someone's going to pull you aside after a meeting and say, hey, you could have done this better, or hey, nice job, if you want to get coffee and discuss this more, let me know. So you create opportunities for others to invite you, because I will tell you now, I look for people that I can grow. Everybody who gets more and more senior is looking for people that they can grow. So if you're that person, that's amazing. But if you never put yourself out there, you're never going to be that person. Nobody's interested in the will you be my mentor conversation as you get more senior. So I would say do more, bring something to the table. If you get that 15-minute conversation with somebody, don't ask. My number one pet peeve, and I always give this feedback to people, is don't ask questions of me that can be found on the internet. Don't ask me, tell me about your career. It is on LinkedIn. You can figure this out for yourself. Do not waste the 15 minutes that we have on that. So bring something interesting to the table. I read this thing that you wrote and I have an opinion, or I have a take on something that you have created, or I'm working on this thing. Can you give feedback? Again, like something people don't realize is the people that you want as your mentors are people that are continuing to be curious. So if you bring to me a trend that is interesting, oh, this is what is happening, or this is my take on how AI ethics is going to evolve, I'm super curious in a 25-year-old's opinion of that. So you bring something to the table. Don't just ask and ask and ask, right? So that's, you have to put yourself out there. You have to bring something to the table. Don't ask stupid questions. Don't ask questions that can be found on the internet. And that 15 minutes can turn into an hour and a half, or that 15 minutes can turn into a follow-up conversation, or that 15 minutes can turn into a lifelong relationship that you have. But this idea of how do you go, like lots of people are like, oh, who's the most senior person? How do I get this person who's a VP to be my mentor? You can't. You actually probably want someone like two or three levels down when you're early in your career, but you still need to be noticed because those people are really busy. And they're looking to grow somebody. They're looking to hire the next rock star. Are you going to be that person? It is entirely up to you to make yourself that person.
This is nothing short of great. And I think I can't wait to put this podcast out to the world, because there's just so many things to take away from it. Being proactive, putting yourself out there, rely on your intuition. You own your own sort of growth. Nobody else cares about it. And just really understand where you are, who you are, be comfortable. And just, I think those are some key takeaways for me from that last 40, 30 minute, I don't even know how long it's been, conversation that we've had. But this is wonderful, Meenal. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
If you're interested in solving product case challenges or experiencing what a PM does by stepping into the shoes of a product manager in a live program, you should check out pmschool.io. If you like what you heard, do share this with friends, colleagues, and family members, and give us a rating on your favorite podcast streaming app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. We'll be back with another one very soon. Until then, stay curious and stay safe. This is your host, Arjav Jain, signing off.